Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hi, everybody. This is the Cricket Badger podcast.
Each badger marks the track with its own scent.
His black legs are short but very powerful for digging. The name badger probably comes from the French word bêcher, meaning digger.
And hello, everybody around the world. It is very good to have you with us, Cricket Badger Podcast. It's been about a week, I think, since we were last with you. And quite a lot's happened. It was a World Cup that was a little bit tedious at times. The matches were a bit one-sided. It was a little bit of a damp squib, the World Cup. And all of a sudden, it's woken up. And as I said, I think, in one of the earlier podcasts, you won't remember this World Cup for the early matches. You'll remember it for how it finishes. And at the moment, it is bubbling up rather nicely. Our thoughts are with Mujeeb, who will be going to bed tonight, watching a dolly catch, appearing at him at short fine leg, dropping it and effectively dropping Afghanistan's chances of getting through to the semi-finals in the process. Glenn Maxwell, wow. We'll talk about that as we go through. We'll talk about Angelo Matthews and his timekeeping. We'll talk about all things Cricket World Cup as we go through. And pleased to say, joined by Claire Sanderson, Neil Varani. Hello to you two.
Hey, James.
Hi, James.
How are you both? Have you both been enjoying the cricket? You were saying that you were busy over the weekend with your romantic life, Neil. But apart from that, have you been enjoying the World Cup?
Yeah, very much so. Always good to be an Indy fan during the group stage of a World Cup.
It's all going to go downhill from here.
We said last time that, you know, people are complaining that it's all a bit obvious what's going to happen. But, you know, we look back on World Cups with rose-tinted glasses. I seem to remember same thing in 2019 as we got through the group stages, and, you know, we had 20 overs at the end of the final, which redeemed the entire tournament.
Well, all I can remember in 2019 was Indian supporters telling me it shouldn't be in England because it rains too much here. But it shouldn't be in India. The outfields are disastrous. There's going to be somebody seriously injured. But, well, that's a whole other topic of conversation. Claire, good to see you again. Glenn Maxwell, your favourite cricketer, when he was at the Kings 11 Punjab, he really did perform well for them. And you took him to your heart, didn't you?
Yeah. Maybe the other way around. So, I can't help saying, you know, he could not buy a run. What did he didn't score barely any fours or sixes the whole time he's with Punjab Kings. And then, I mean, obviously, he went off to RCB and got runs. But he comes along, you know, his team are down and out and whatever. And then, you know, I didn't watch today's game, but I was keeping up with it on the app and stuff. And what destructive innings. So, he's a tricky fish to figure out, isn't he?
I'll tell you what, he's in form at the moment. That century against Netherlands, he was doing well against England until he messed up. And then that innings today, I was saying earlier, I think, after reflecting a little bit, having a bit of time to look back at today's match, I think in the context of the match situation, because it was all but nearly a knockout for the semi-final place. In the context of where Australia were when he came to the crease and where they soon were after he came to the crease, down and out. I think the, for its worth, win predictor, score predictor, whatever it was, had Afghanistan at 98% likely to win that match when Glenn Maxwell was fairly new at the crease there. I don't think I've ever seen an innings quite like that. I don't think I've ever seen an innings where, considering the fact that probably about halfway through his back went and he could hardly move at the crease, some of those shots at the end were him basically, his feet in concrete, just swinging the bat through the line and dispatching it for six and what have you. And I just thought it was an incredibly... I mean, I tweeted actually when he was about... I mean, they were probably about 70, 80 runs short of victory. That is this actually right that he's staying out there? This is going to do him a damage. Yeah. Maybe they should retire him. I think there was a lot of talk about that at one stage. The umpires were getting involved because he was getting a lot of treatment for his back and the physio was on and off and on and off. The fact that he continued and saw them across the line. I mean, a word for Pat Cummins, his innings was very sensible at the other end, slightly less photogenic, and it won't be on the show reels for the match Pat Cummins defensive shots. But Neil, I don't think I've seen an ODI innings quite like that. I think it's the only double century scored in a chase. Most of the double centuries, if not all, have been scored setting. We've seen the likes of Rohit smacking three double hundreds, but obviously on tracks that were nice and bouncy and Rohit friendly. That today, I thought, was just extraordinary.
The only innings that I've heard of which comes close is Kapil Devs versus Zimbabwe.
Had to be an Indian, didn't it? Had to be an Indian player.
Well, and the thing is, no one saw that because it didn't get filmed. So apart from the however many thousands there were at Nottinghamshire, I think. But he came in at, 19 for 5 and hit 183 at something. But this was, it was ludicrous. I think the Afghans... The ball had stopped moving as much. The dew had come in. Now, the fabled dew that made everyone chase it in Mumbai. I think the lack of experience came in a little bit. I think when he was really struggling, then maybe they could have bowled a bit wider, made him have to start to reach for shots.
There were three instances, Neil. He was dropped on 33 by Mujeeb. I referred to that in the intro there. An absolute dolly. I'd have backed anybody to have taken that.
I agree. And also, he dropped Glenn Phillips in the New Zealand match. And Phillips and Latham went on to knock too much. But I do want to stay away from having go at Mujeeb because...
There was a drop catch by Mujeeb. There was a drop catch which was a lot tougher by Hashmatullah, where he got basically a bit confused with Rashid Khan, set off a little bit later, ended up having to dive and he got his fingertips to it. And then there was the LBW, which for me was absolutely bang plum. I was it was all about whether it was pitching in line. When I saw it was pitching in line, I was thinking, that's out. And then for somehow it actually went over the bales on the
Well, so did he. He was walking off as soon as he saw where it pitched. There was also his first ball, the hat-trick ball, which got reviewed because it bounced in front of the keeper. And if you edge it, it tends to go further than if it clips your leg. So they'd gone up for LBW on the basis that it hadn't travelled at all. And then he'd got an edge to an absolutely beautiful ball by Azmat. And he rode his luck at the start.
I said on the commentary, Neil, today that sometimes, and this was right after he'd been dropped by Mujeeb, sometimes I've heard batters say this, they get away with three or four things, which we've just referred to, and they think, blimey, this must be my day. They can't get me out. I'm getting away with everything. It must be written in the stars that this is my day. And from there on, he just basically put the foot down. He wasn't cavalier. He played quite sensibly for Glenn Maxwell early on. Pat Cummins in tandem with him played very sensibly at the other end. But then in the latter stages, when he had the back issue and the physio was on and off and he could hardly run, they were turning down singles all the way through. He was getting treatment lying. There was one stage where he took off for a run and it looked like he'd ricked something really badly. He went down in absolute agony, was lying on his back. I thought, that's him stretched off here. And yet he still managed to get back up on his hind legs and finish the job off. It was, all of those things kind of combined. I just thought that was an incredible knock from him today.
I think one thing that you can say is that Australia were in such a dire position that it was the opposite of when, you know, people say that, you know, a middling chase can be the trickiest type.
Yeah.
Where he was, and then with the injury as well, it completely, it took away so many different options. So it really focused his thinking into, I can do, you know, maybe three things on each with each ball that comes to me, rather than a player as skillful as Maxwell. Sometimes you think he's got too many options of what to do, and that's when he gets himself in trouble.
Yeah.
But there was just absolute clarity, which, you know, another team's been speaking about missing, and that's how
we don't mention that team. We're not mentioning that team on this podcast. Just one last thing before I go back to Claire. Did you notice that when he got about 25 short, 22 short, he started punching the air and then gesticulating to the dressing room like he thought he'd won it? And I found that quite strange, because when you listen to Ben Stokes in the chase at Headingley, and I've heard a few other players, when it's kind of the batch is almost dead and you're playing cavalier cricket and there's less pressure on you because you think you've probably lost the match, it's not until you get down to 20, 10 runs required that you start thinking, oh, blimey, if I get out now, we could still mess this up. The pressure's now on. And I thought it was kind of a little bit weird that he'd shown a lot of relief when they were still about 25 short. If he'd got out then, you've only got Zampa and Hazelwood to come. He could have had a real twist at the end. So I thought it was quite strange he was punching the air that prematurely.
No, I think it was so hopeless. I think it was so hopeless beforehand that maybe just start to realise that it was actually something feasible. Before, he was just gonna, you know, give it his best shot and then see where it could take him, and then it was only at that stage where he thought, actually, look, you know, if I get run out, which, you know, could have happened quite easily when they did take a single, then, you know, Zampa's good for 10 runs. We saw what he did on Saturday, and even Big Josh has worked on his batting a bit. So it became less of an issue. When it was...
I said on commentary that if he can get them within 30, then Pat Cummins can... You know, we all know that that isn't his natural game to be defending like that. We've seen him in the IPL smacking sixes. So,
well, a word to him playing the KL Rahul role perfectly and, you know, turning down singles to get Maxi to his double. I thought that was very nice.
It was quite fitting he got to 200. Claire, you're a Yorkshire fan like myself. Were you in the Damian Martin overseas incarnation at Yorkshire? Did you see his double century against, I think it was Gloucestershire at Headingley?
No, I didn't see it.
That was the best innings I've ever seen live, because that was, you know, if you ever get a new cricket bat, you stand in front of the mirror and you're making the little click noises as you smack the ball for all to the boundary in your imagination. Damian Martin that day was doing that for real, and basically found every single gap. Everything was along the carpet, and it was one of the most incredible innings I've ever seen, because it was just a batter of immense quality, in complete sync with his environment and in complete control of what he was doing. In terms of the match though today, Claire, Australia got massively out of jail. They were saved by one man. I've often said that T20s could be won by one person, but ODIs maybe less so. But today, Glenn Maxwell won that pretty much on his own. But that's now six wins on the bounce for Australia. They've got themselves out of massive hole there today. Because a defeat to Afghanistan today would have meant that Australia were going into that final match with jeopardy on that final match and potentially missing out on the semi-finals. Do you start to think for Australia that they know how to navigate a tournament, and that might, the kind of the confidence they're gaining from winning from all kinds of situations is only going to serve them well going forward?
Well, I guess there's two things to look at. I mean, I didn't see today's game, but you were talking about Maxwell and this injury. If that is an injury that's going to be carried forward and he doesn't play, then where does that leave the team? Because they'll all know that, well, without one man, we're lost.
I did
and if
say
he's I'm, out, then what does that, you know, what implications does that have?
I said that on the comment, kind of, that was the purpose of my tweet, really, was that I said it probably when they were about 120 short and he was starting to show signs of a back issue. If you ask Pat Cummings, would you prefer to lose this match but have Glenn Maxwell for the rest of the tournament? Or would you prefer to win this match but grind Glenn Maxwell into the dirt and him not be able to play for the rest of the tournament? Which one would you pick? And he probably would have gone for the former. But you were never going to get Glenn Maxwell off that pitch today because he was so invested in that chase. You'd have had to have harpooned him to get him off.
Yeah, and I guess the latter wouldn't have come to fruition without the former. Like, you wouldn't have, if you'd have jeopardised your semi-final spot by taking him out and losing that game, then potentially you haven't got a semi-final spot. So I guess you have to put your eggs in that basket and go with what you've got in front of you. I mean, like you say, he wasn't going to come off for anybody. But yeah, interesting how that might kind of pan out going forward.
We've both times Maxwell's got a century in this tournament, Claire. It's been alongside Pat Cummings, who has played very much the minor role. He's 100 off 40 balls, whatever it was, against Netherlands. Pat Cummings had was it about 6 runs he scored in the 100 partnership? Today, Pat Cummings ended up walking off not out 11 or something.
He left off about 64, because, like I say, I'm studying the numbers rather than the visuals today.
It wouldn't be a bad idea to open with those two, would it? Because they seem to be working in tandem quite nicely. together.
I don't think that's a risk I'd be taking. Yeah, lose them early. What have you got?
Yeah, as I say, though, I mean, absolute hats off to Glenn Maxwell. However he's feeling tonight, he seemed to walk off the pitch a bit better. He seemed to maybe loosen up as he got towards the end, and maybe the tension came out of his body. But what a knock from him today, and that pretty much puts Australia. Does that actually qualify Australia, that win today? Yeah, so they're through to the semi-finals. Wow. So South Africa and India are into the semi-finals now, and now it's a combination of New Zealand, Pakistan, Afghanistan, still with various percentage chances of qualifying for the fourth place.
That's awesome, isn't it? That, like, although we've got three qualifiers, after a tense game today, you know, it's still all to play for.
It did look at one stage, Claire, that the top four were going to run away in the group stage, and possibly even the last three matches were going to be dead rubbers. But that's not really been the case, is it?
No, and I think we talked about that I don't know, I've only been on one of these podcasts, but we talked about that whole format and how, you know, there's only a couple of teams that are really out of the total qualification picture, so...
You are listening to the Cricket Badger Podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
One of those, before we move on to Angelo Matthews, is England, Claire. And it has been desperate, hasn't it? And, you know, Joss Butler's been saying that he's worried about his own form, that, you know, Neil mentioned the word clarity. And tomorrow, England play Netherlands in what is basically a battle for the wooden spoon.
Yeah. I've been shocked at how poor England have been. And, you know, there's this, you know, they're overworked, the schedule's overstretched, but didn't they? And then at the same time, they haven't played enough ODIs. And it's like, well, weren't some of those New Zealand T20s changed to ODIs to give some practice leading into the World Cup? But then they sat all the team out and put in a different team.
And then played Ireland for some, you know, with a Lions team, effectively. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, and I think it was you tweeted the Guardian article today, or was it yesterday, you know, about this swanky hotels and what a rough lifestyle it is. And, you know, poor old Joss hasn't had the time off because he's been playing the IPL and the 100 alongside all his duties. And, you know, I mean...
As the Graham Chill kids used to say, Claire, just say no. You can turn these things down, can't you?
Zamo. Be like Zamo. Yeah.
Zamo never played in the IPL, did he?
Zamo didn't say no either.
No. Don't be like
Zamo.
You've seen the Grain Shield documentaries as well, haven't you? But the, I mean, it is dreadful for England, Neil. I mean, 2015, when we had all of the fallout from that because England had been so desperately bad in the Cricket World Cup, and Owen Morgan took them forward over the 4 years, and obviously won the World Cup in 2019. This is even worse than 2015. This is as bad as I've ever known England in a major tournament. It's dreadful.
There was someone on another show who tweeted asking people what their explanations were, and to me, the entire England outlook for ODIs after the World Cup can be illustrated by what Joe Root said in January when he turned down playing for England against South Africa in an ICC Super League series to go off to the IL T20 and earn about $400,000. And he said, I know where my ODI game is at. I mean, to paraphrase, he basically said, I've sorted out ODIs, so I'm going to go off and play some franchise T20, earn a bit of money, and, you know, I already know how to play it, so don't need to do anything more.
It's that word complacency, isn't it, that's been used a lot over the last few weeks. England have just assumed that they are ready, but there's actually no proof and no preparation in that plan.
Like they've had four series this year. South Africa, ICC Super League, they had to play, but half a load of the players didn't go because they were playing in the IL T20. The ones who did play were the ones playing the SA 20 instead. So they were already on site. They had the Bangladesh tour again, ICC Super League. They sent either 14 players, I think, and a couple got injured, sent home. They didn't bother replacing them. They didn't have most of the main...
Of the big ones, Josh Butler was the only one there, I think. Josh Butler...
Milan was there.
Joe Root didn't.
Milan was there because he scored a century. Jason Roy scored a century. Adil Rashid had a really good stand with him to win one game, I think. But that was because England had organised a test series against New Zealand, a great test series, highlighting everything that's wonderful about test cricket, but it was outside the World Test Championship schedule. The only reason they'd been organised was to earn some money, but they'd organised it knowing that it was going to clash with official ICC Super League matches. So you can see the priorities there straight away. The New Zealand series, full strength side as far as anyone was fit. No arguments there, but they did have four T20s for God knows what reason, apart from money again. And then they had a series against Ireland two weeks before a World Cup and didn't play any of the World Cup squad.
Completely pointless. And did you see what Rob Key said in the interview on Sky? He basically said, you know, in an ideal world, we'd have brought this squad out a lot earlier, but we had the matches against Ireland to play. Well, none of that team played against Ireland. You could have brought them out. You could have got them on a plane earlier, taken a couple of coaching staff out with you and actually had some meaningful preparation in Indian conditions. Yeah. But
I mean, that's rubbish
Lions,
as well.
Three matches against Ireland, effectively Zach Crawley and the Lions.
The players weren't going to come out to do 3 weeks prep. They've got so much power that... You know, actually preparing for a World Cup on sites like
and
that.
And why do you need, Neil? Why would they need to? Because they've got ODI cricket under control. Everything's going to be fine. No, it wasn't. Claire?
All I was just kind of working through in my head is, so after 2015, there was Owen Morgan, the squad of players, and he was going to, you know, take some ownership, responsibility, and be a leader who was going to carry them to the next tournament. And you know, I'm no disrespect to Mr. Butler, but the other Mr. Butler, but he doesn't look like he's got that in him. Who is going to be? Who is the next captain? I mean, I bet you could do just as good a job, James, if not better. But, who is going to be that? Who is there? Who's around now? Who's got any kind of, you know, that what you look for in a strong captain? Because this, for me, this is one of the crucial things of a team is having the right captain to you know, galvanise a squad, put faith in the players. You know, I listened to some of the other captains talking. And yet, and I think it said it in that Guardian article, you know, I mean, you know, simpering a little bit. And I just, I don't see the strong leadership qualities. And somebody who's going to say, all right, we've done this. Huh?
He wears his heart on his sleeve a bit, and he looks down. When if he's down, he looks down. And you know, a leader wants to be kind of even keel, but he looks like he's about to burst into tears sometimes. And he obviously he cares. He obviously cares because it upsets him. But
that's you know, as a strong leader, you've got certain qualities that you care and it hurts. But actually, my responsibility, part of my responsibility, is to pick this team up, to guide them through. And I think I've thought about this quite a bit, like looking at Rohit and Virat. And obviously, Virat was this fiery captain, the aggression, the this, that, the other. But, you know, the two were a bit like, I'm not living up to expectations. But with Rohit, he's got this cool, calm approach, you know, and and I think he's got Virat in his ear, chirping him on, you know, but I'm failing to see that with the England team. They just look kind of a bit disorientated. And if they are going to think about what's next for the England ODI team, surely a crucial thing is going to be finding a strong, resilient, empowering, you know, leader who can shake it off a little bit. I mean, I saw after one of the defeats, Moeen Ali being interviewed and grilled as if he was the captain. I was a bit like, you know, I know it's a tough job. You know, I do leadership in my organisation that I used to work for. And when the buck stops with you, doesn't it? And I don't know. So it'd be interesting to see who's going to take up that role and how they're going to go about it.
And Moeen Ali effectively said when he was asked, he said, well, we got, you know, we need to sweep clean, that we got some young talent that's ready to come in. And he was it almost sounded like he was resigning. And that was him calling it a day because, I mean, presumably, if they're going to look ahead for 4 years, Moeen Ali, possibly David Milan, the Roots, the Bairstows, the Butlers, etc., you know, Stokes, we'll probably go back into retirement again. I think it was wrong to bring him out of it. I said so at the time. It's not like me being wise after the event. But there's a number of players that have been in that setup. Chris Wokes, they've been around for a long time now. Maybe it's time to basically just think 4 years' time, who are we going to go with? Rian Ahmed, whoever, if it's Zach Crawley's team, whatever you want to do it, trust in them and invest in them and let them lead the ODI thing forward.
Yeah, find a leader.
You mentioned the captains there. Of the captains that we've got in this World Cup, obviously 10 of them, we're going to discount Jos Buttler, I think. I think one of the best captains in this Cricket World Cup, I mean, I agree with you entirely on Rohit, for Mumbai Indians as well in the past, he's got a lot of experience in captaincy. Jos Buttler never had that experience coming in to take over. Rohit Sharma's served his apprenticeship before he's taken over the reins at Team India. But Scott Edwards, the Netherlands captain, I think he has been outstanding. The way he talks, the way he leads that, in terms of man for man, England are so much stronger than Netherlands. But Scott Edwards is getting a tune out of that team. They've only got the one win so far. They could still finish bottom of the pile. But they have been, apart from in one match, they have been close in every single match. They've been a competitor for everybody. And Scott Edwards has really led them well, Neil. I think he's been superb.
Oh, yeah, he's been absolutely brilliant. He's been playing really well as well. He's probably been the best keeper at the tournament.
And that helps, isn't it? If you're playing well, it probably helps your captaincy. Yeah. And Jos Buttler's not.
Yeah.
No, he's not. Not at all. But tactically, he's been brilliant. His bowling changes, the way he rotates through the meagre stocks that he has, although he seems to have about five all-rounders in that team, and he gets the best out of all of them, bowls them at the right time. Yeah, he's been brilliant. Just as a slight retort to Claire, I think you can have the two types of captains. You can have the Morgan, Dhoni, sort of Rohit, sort of, you know, ice cool, very, very measured. But I think there is still a place for sort of the fiery, inspired through actions and stuff that Virat was more successfully in tests, but also he had a good record in ODIs. Ponting and Ranatunga were those kind of generals type as well. What Buttler hasn't shown is either. When Yeah, you know, the team looked at him and he just looks deflated. Yeah. It's like when he was at that last Ashes test tour to Australia. So you look at him and he's just got these sad, sad eyes, and everyone just wants to cry and give him a big hug.
In terms of the fiery versus the more placid or level, even keel kind of captains, do you think the a fiery captain like a Virat is best for a team that's coming up and growing? And then when you get to being very good, then you need somebody that's maybe a bit more level-headed, like a Rohit then. You know, Virat's kind of led India. He set the bar. He set the bar high in terms of feeling and fitness. He drove them forward. He was passionate on the pitch. He kind of led them. And he has done wonders for Indian cricket. And now he's passed the baton over to Rohit with almost like a finished article team. And Rohit's very easy, more than capable of kind of maintaining excellence, really.
I think that fireness, as long as it's focused, can still be very good to G on your troops, even if you're at the top. I mean, Ponting's team, he was taking over from World Cup winners and led them undefeated in the next two World Cups. I guess with Ranatunga, you would say that's more of a up-and-coming kind of upstarts guy. But you know, as long as it's focused, then, you know, it's not all just kind of dragging them along with the emotion. It's, and I think in tests at least, you got that from Virat. In ODIs, less so. So I think you can have both, but it is the focus and it's got to be calculated.
I thought Aidan Markram led South Africa well in Themba Bavuma's absence as well, but Bavuma's back in charge there. I'll tell you another captain that's impressed me, who still could break Indian hearts. Pakistan still have a little chance of getting into the semi-finals, but I thought even in defeat, Pakistan, in that match that was really close, I thought Babar led them really well, kept them in the game and drove them in and kept them focused rather than just letting it drift. You're an Indian fan, Neil. You're never going to get caught. It's all
I love Pakistan, but no. Babar got the bowling changes wrong, and it's not the first time there.
Don't criticise Babar on this. This is the Cricket Babar podcast.
he had a lovely, sedate innings on Saturday, didn't he, while Fakhar was actually winning the game. But no, in that game against South Africa, that was a combination of South Africa absolutely soiling the bed and some very, very good bowling. But then at the end, he got his field placings and his choice of bowlers very wrong, and his captaincy he's been called out by Pakistani media. His own players are railing against him in the changing room. I mean, you know, this kind of chaos is what we love about Pakistani cricket from
you
the outside.
You wait until Ahmedabad when he's lifting that trophy, Neil Varane. would that be the most unpopular event ever in Indian history, if Pakistan lift the trophy in Ahmedabad in mid-November?
Well, I mean, they've got to get past England first.
Badgers are furry creatures. 85% of women badgers think bad grooming is a major turn-off. 80% of women badgers think men should trim below the belt. 89% of men think good grooming is essential to their professional success. Don't just dismiss it out of hand. Get on there, manscaped.com. Check out their great range of male grooming accessories. Hygiene, appearance, attractiveness, confidence. Simply go to manscaped.com. Quote the discount code BADGER. You get 20% off, you get free shipping, and you get some seriously quality equipment. Manscaped.com. Together, we save balls. Angelo Matthews timed out yesterday. Lots of controversy over that. Seems to like everything in terms of that kind of thing seems to have divided opinion down the middle. Either Shakib's the most evil person in the world, or Angelo should have got a bit of more of a grip and a bit of a stride on.
Can it be both?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I mean, I'll kick us off on this because I am not a Shakib fan. I think Shakib is petulant. I think Shakib is selfish. I think Shakib is a bit of an idiot at times. There's plenty of videos around of Shakib kicking down stumps and throwing his toys out the pram and being an absolute child on the pitch. So I'm not a massive Shakib fan. I don't think he did anything wrong yesterday. Basically, people who are talking about the spirit of cricket, which is a very airy-fairy kind of phrase, the spirit of cricket is about treating people with respect. It's about shaking hands afterwards. It's about, if it's your thing, buying somebody a pint in the bar afterwards or taking somebody out for a meal, being good to people, being nice to people. But it doesn't, you know, it's also about abiding by the laws of the game, isn't it? And actually playing cricket to the laws of the game, Claire. And that's exactly what Shakib did yesterday.
Well, you know, I mean, we've been here before recently, haven't we? Some teams appeal, somebody's genuinely out. You put in appeal, the umpire gives them out. Do you want to withdraw it? Well, that's up to me. You know, as a captain, I'm going to make that decision. Or and you know, within the laws of the game, he was out. And I've kind of looked at it. And, you know, again, it's in the game I didn't see live, so I've watched the clips. And from what I can figure out, he wasn't ready to take his guard by the time he was timed out. Then he started faffing with his helmet, you know. So, I mean, I don't know what was going on in his mind. I've always respected Angelo Matthews quite a lot. But to me, that was just like, mate, you're messing about. You weren't ready and you're genuinely out. And then, obviously, Shakib could have said, well, you know, I'm going to give you a chance. But that's his choice, isn't it?
So, I mean, trophy places on the line, Claire. You know, win's important.
Well, exactly. Just
you don't get any prizes and any plaudits for backing down in a situation like that. Somebody on Twitter will say, "Oh, that was very well played by Shakib," but in a year's time, Shakib didn't get his team to qualify for the Champions Trophy. And it was a disastrous World Cup campaign.
Exactly. I mean, we played our women's softball team, played a game in the summer, and this girl, she basically did a Lagan. The ball came out, she knocked it up in the air and then smashed it for six. And we were like, you can't do that. And we said to the umpire, how's that? And he said, you're out. And we were like, all right, then see you later, love. And they were like, you're not going seriously. And we were like, well, what do you want us to do? And this is in a, you know, a women's softball thing. So so what can I say? Yeah, stick to the rules, mate.
Is it just about that, Neil? Sticking to the rules?
The laws are in place for a very good reason. And, yeah, you and I have been on opposite sides of the argument previously.
I can't believe that for a second, Verana.
Look. There's a good reason for each law, like running out the non-strikers. That is to stop people, you know, starting halfway down the wicket. There is a time limit for getting out there, because in red ball cricket, then there is a time limit on the day. In white ball cricket, there is an actual time limit set by the organisers. And if the bowling team doesn't complete their overs in that time, then there's a penalty. And that's why you have these playing conditions. Now, what Angelo did, I don't believe he went out there knowingly with a faulty helmet. I also don't believe it just snapped while he was out there. I think it was broken when he walked out and he hadn't checked it beforehand. Because as we've seen a lot of times, a lot of cricketers are a bit sloppy when it comes to these things, you know.
Bob Willis phoned us, so he walked out for a test innings without his bat. You remember that?
I remember that.
there was someone, I think it was Majib, actually, earlier in this tournament, who walked out without his box. Shakib didn't time him out.
That's even more important than a helmet for me, I think.
But that's his prerogative. What Angelo did is he didn't check his equipment before he went out. According to Adrian Holstock, you know, rather than Angelo's little time-stamped videos, I believe the fourth umpire said he wasn't ready to take his guard before the chin strap thing. And then he showed disrespect, which is the first thing in the spirit of cricket, respecting the game and respecting your opponents. He didn't speak to the umpire. He didn't speak to Shakib and say, look, my chin strap's gone. He just walked off calling for another helmet with no regard for anyone else. By the time that Shakib finally said, how's that? It'd been about 5-6 minutes. So, you know, Angelo was showing no respect to the opposition team, who quite frankly could have been penalised with a fielding restriction at the end of the innings. And he just acted like he owned the pitch. When you're bowling, the pitch is yours.
I on the Mankad run out at the non-strikers end debate, I don't like Mankad. I don't like, I've called it skullduggery, I've called it sneaky, I've called it all those kind of things in the past. But it's out. You ultimately, it's out because it's part of the laws of the game. So, sometimes, just to clarify, I think sometimes what I really don't like is when a bowler gets to the top of his action in the popping crease and then doubles back and runs out of a non-striker whose momentum is taken. That's what Ashwin did. It's my turn. I've given you your moment. Ultimately, whether I like it or not, it is out. The laws of the game say that that is out. So for me, what you do is if you don't like a law, you, as a governing body, you write to the ICC, MCC and say, this law's not fit for purpose. Can we look at changing it because we don't like it? You've got to kind of respect the laws of the game whilst you're on the pitch.
Could you let the MCC members at Lords know who they should speak to about changing the laws of the game? Because they didn't seem to realise that during the Ashes. No, the main issue I have,
and how you should behave in the long room as well at times.
That too. The main issue I have is, look, I wouldn't do that in a game in the park, but I'm not a professional getting paid six figures a year to play this game. I think the professional thing to do is to know the laws of the game that you're playing. If you're getting paid good money to go out and represent your country, the least you can do is understand the laws and the playing conditions that you're playing under.
And it's not like, Claire, the laws are kind of like on the back of a cigarette packet. They are lengthy. There are, you know, clause 15.1569, whatever. Yeah, they are fairly in depth. They are fairly robust. And like I say, if there is an issue, what tends to happen is that there might be something happened to which obviously the laws haven't quite kind of got a handle on. Something new happens probably every year. And then the laws will be tinkered with by a committee to kind of reflect that the game's either changed or that wasn't quite right. And then they will move forward with a revised law as a result of that. But they do pretty much think of everything, the laws of the game. They are there to actually be abided by.
Well, yeah, and I think, as Neil said, you know, it's a limited over match, limited time to play the match. You know, there isn't time for, it's just time wasting, and it has an impact on the overall game.
I mean, Glenn Maxwell could have been timed out whilst he was lying on the floor today, couldn't he?
Well, actually, when you were discussing Maxwell, I was like thinking, you know, what impact is that going to have on the game, and is there a point at which you say, look, you know,
I think we're getting very close to that, because there was a discussion between the umpires, the physio, Maxwell, Cummins as the captain out there in the middle. And it was like, you know, we can't have this physio running on every three balls to treat this chappy. If he's not fit to bat, he's got to get himself off. And Zampa at one stage was actually feet inside the inside the playing area, walking out to replace him, and then got told to go back off because I'm staying on here, kind of thing.
That's really interesting.
So the Aussies were very, very close to actually replacing Maxwell because of the officials were saying this is just dragging on far too long.
Yeah, like time wasting. And clearly, you know, he had an issue. So it's not just, you know, it's not just about wasting time, but it is an additional time onto the game that there isn't really that space for. So
you've got to be fit to bat. You can't have intensive physio after every ball you face, can you? So you can face the next one. There's a limit to how long that can take. I mean, Angelo Matthews, I mean, he said afterwards that they refused to shake hands with their opponents because they disrespected them. And Shaqib basically said he was a feeler on his side. He's refused to name that feeler so that guy doesn't get abuse and stuff. But he said, I was told that, you know, if you appeal here, he's going to be out because he's been taking ages to get ready. So I appealed. The umpires told me, do you want to kind of stick to that? And he said, yes. And then he was out. And he said, it's very similar to what Ashwin said, actually, about his run out of the strikers end of Joss Butler, was, well, it's in the rules. I've abided by the rules. What's, you know, what are you going to do about it, kind of thing? You know, and there was a quote from R. Ashwin about, you play hard, you play to win, you play within the rules, and you shake hands afterwards. That was, it was along those lines now.
Do you know who else, which other captain ran out Joss Butler before at the non-striker's end?
Was it Shakib?
No, it was Angelo Matthews.
Was it?
Absolutely, well, fine with Senna and Iker doing that in 2014 at the Oval, I think it was.
Well, he actually said, Angelo Matthews actually said, it's not like this is a mancad or a something else. This is something that's totally different to anything that's ever happened before. Kind of as if...
Well, yeah, it's happened a number of times, but not in international cricket.
It's the height of hypocrisy to me. Is that, I mean, I'll bring Johnny Bairstow into this. I'll bring Angelo Matthews into this. You play dopey cricket. You're not aware of your situation. You get yourself into trouble. You get yourself out, and then you look to the spirit of cricket to bail you out of that hole because you've made a mess. And then when it doesn't, you're angry with your opponents and you you have a sulk on. I mean, Johnny's still sulking about his stumping in the Ashes even now. So he was obviously upset by it. But ultimately, it's sport. You get on with it and you kind of play on and you play to the laws of the game for me.
Yeah, I tweeted something which on that. I said the spirit of cricket only gets invoked when... or seems to only get invoked when a batter has either been too lazy to read up on the laws or is too arrogant to believe that the laws apply to him.
Yeah.
And stuff like Angelo and Johnny at Lords are when they believe that the other team doesn't count. What they were doing matters more. So Angelo not saying anything, not asking the umpire for an extension to go and get his equipment fix, not saying to Shakib, you know, look, this has happened, is it all right? Johnny scratching his mark on the crease and thinking automatically that means that the over's finished when the laws say that both teams need to believe that to be the case to do it.
And also, I mean, the supporters' misunderstanding of the laws as well, because in the fallout of the Johnny incident, there was complete misunderstanding. Just because it's the final ball of the over doesn't mean it's any different to, you know, receiving a ball number three of the over or anything like that. Same rules apply. It makes no sense. I mean, just before we move on from, and welcome back, Claire. Disappeared for a second there, but you're back with us. It just leaves a sour taste for me, the fact that you kind of bang on about spirit of cricket, but by doing that, you're actually disrespecting the sport that you're talking about, because you're not abiding by the laws that actually govern that sport. It makes no sense whatsoever.
My name is Jacob and I sent the Badger a message, and now I'm on the podcast with this jingle. If you would like to get in touch with the Cricket Badger podcast, then tweet @cricket_badger.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Finish off today by talking about India and their chances to lift this trophy, because we have seen India spontaneously combust in a semi-final before. It has been known. They haven't had the greatest of record in global tournaments, considering they've got 1.4 billion people who all love cricket and plenty overseas who would, you know, give anything to wear that shirt and play alongside Virat and Rohit, etc. But surely... Sure, I'm going to start with Claire before Neil gives us his very impartial view on this. Surely this is India's to lose, isn't it? They've been exceptional. You know, the bowling department is operating at full pelt. You've got Virat showing why he's one of the legends of the game in white ball format. Rohit is blasting the ball from from the start of the innings. Shubman Gill's not hit top gear yet, and there's more to come from him potentially. Every single piece of that jigsaw is in place for India. They can only beat themselves, can't they?
I'm not going to make any predictions because, like I was saying to you guys earlier, you know, I don't often watch matches where I've everything's riding on my team being victorious. But as you say, you know, people are really coming into form. Like Shreyas Iyer has really come into form and played some really solid innings. You know, I mean, Ravi Jadeja, like, what a guy, you know, he's just really hitting his straps. And as I was talking about earlier, that captaincy thing with, you know, your greatest wingman there beside you with Rohit and Virat. I mean, I just think they are awesome. And, you know, possibly it's theirs to lose, but I'm not going to make any predictions whatsoever.
The trouble is, Neil, you can play blimmin' well over the 9 matches of the group phase, but if you have a dodgy day after that, it's gone, isn't it?
Well, I think we've just seen today. One man can make a difference. India could play really well and come up against Maxwell or Clarkson or trying to think who else, Glenn Phillips or Fakhar Zaman. Well, we've come up against Fakhar Zaman going on a terror before, and then a left armer to come in. Or, you know, they've all got dangerous players.
Yeah, if Afghanistan managed to crawl into fourth place from where they are, and Rashid Khan has one of his days, you know, all of a sudden you're five down for next to nothing or something. You know, it can happen, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely, to anyone. And, you know, for all that England fans say that they were the best team at the last World Cup, I don't think the results actually bear that out. They were the best team over that period.
What?
The full period running up to the World Cup, absolutely best team in the world. During the actual World Cup, there were 3 losses. There was a very good win that I was at Edgbaston to see. You couldn't get separated by normal methods in the final and still required a Superman
always comes back to that, doesn't it? Always comes back to that.
But this the thing. History gets written by the winners, doesn't it?
And who were the winners? England. And who are the reigning champions right now? England. So back in your box, Neil.
I think we're playing as well as we have done, and we've got a more well-rounded team and squad. In fact, as great a player as he is, and I'd always have him in the first 11, the bowling attack is so much stronger without Hardik because we've brought in Shami and we've gone all in on specialists.
Shami's been amazing.
It's something like 45 wickets across 14 World Cup games.
I'd got Siraj in my fantasy team, and they put Siraj started off like an absolute lunatic, didn't he? Taking 2 wickets very quickly. And I was thinking, today's the day, everything's going to go right. And then Shami comes on, takes the rest, and that's it.
But I bum raid and get any wickets.
Yeah, everything is clicking into. I mean, there's a big performance from Bumrah around the corner. Yeah, he's going to be very.
Oh, he has been superb. And they can't hit him. No one can hit him at all. Yeah. And so, we've seen the way he bowled. Like the wicket that he took against Nisanka, whoever that was, there was no way anyone was keeping that out. That was an off spinner at 90 miles an hour. This India team looks the best equipped that I've ever seen to win it. And you know, I think it will take a huge performance from a player or a team as a whole.
I'll just throw something at you. India, maybe their tail is a little long. And we saw it in the 2019 World Cup. If you lost early wickets, you end up with the middle order having to maybe bat a little bit cautiously, knowing that if they get out, you've got a tail to expose, you know, maybe not too far away. So if you did get that Trent Bolt scenario again in a semi-final where Rohit is out early, Virat's out early, and all of a sudden the rest are looking around thinking, oh, blimey, our 2 big players are gone. Could that cause trouble?
Yes. Yeah, it could. But we're better placed to deal with that. I think also, you know, we're a much better team than 2019. But also got to remember that our team structure changed halfway through that tournament with what turned out to be a catastrophic injury to Dhawan in terms of how our team was made up, because KL Rahul had started at number 4 and he got moved up to an being an opener. And he is, I'd say, almost as much as Virat in terms of he's absolutely ice cold in that sort of situation. He's not going to throw his wicket away in the same way.
They're big mates, those two, aren't they, Virat and KL?
To be fair, I think most of these team have been together for a long time. KL was playing for India back in... He scored a double hundred, I think, against England in like 2015 in India. He's been in and around for a long time.
I get the impression, though, that him and Virat are quite close. If you were going to have... pair them off in terms of who's best mates in the 11. I would have got the impression that KL and Virat would probably walk off into the sunset together.
I was going to say KL and Hardik, but they kind of got each other into trouble. Not long ago. So maybe they've been forcibly separated. But he's a rock in the middle, and I feel very safe when KL rolls at the crease, especially coming in the middle order when it's mostly against spin bowlers and, you know, you don't have three slips to nick off to. Jadeja is, I don't think he's quite the attacking force that he was, but I think technically he's a much better batter. And we've seen that in his test cricket through the years. So he's kind of that stopgap now, which can protect the tail. Sky is just an absolute maverick. And if he's given the chance to only have to face sort of 50, 60 balls maximum, there can be real damage. I don't know yet how I'd feel about him coming in to face, you know, in the 20th over and having to play long innings. But I said that about Ishan Kishan.
Well, I said it about Maxwell today. Australia do not want Glenn Maxwell in after 8.5 overs. Look what happened.
Well, Maxie's got a test century in India as well. He's one of those players that Cricket Australia are going to turn around and wonder why they wasted for so many years in the test arena. For my money, I haven't mentioned that. Have we heard anything from Cricket Australia about the fact that today's game actually went on at all?
I actually mentioned that on commentary today. Said that you. I actually mentioned you. I think on my commentary stint that you'd mentioned that because they didn't have to. I mean, I have to say there didn't seem to be a lot of goodwill between the two teams. From what I understand, one of the Afghanistan players had said in the last few days, "Oh, it's amazing how Australia are going to play us for points in the World Cup, but they wouldn't play us when it was when we were the worst thing since sliced bread as a nation." And they didn't tour on political reasons. And I got the impression it was just bubbling under the surface, but there was a little bit of acrimony out there between the two sides.
Well, I think it was Naveen who said that. And I think he potentially had a BBL contract. I think Fazal Huq, Faruqi did do, Nabi did do, Rashid did do, Mujeeb. They all spoke out when it was banned. That forfeiting just seems very convenient. They didn't want the players to go out there ahead of the IPL after the India Test Tour. Now that it was less convenient and that losing the points...
Oh, it's an excuse. It was a complete excuse. Yeah, absolutely. Claire, you said you didn't want to make predictions. I want you to make a prediction. Who wins this Cricket World Cup?
Oh, James, you can't make me do that.
I just have.
Oh, gosh. Well, I guess, you know, there comes a time when you just have to have faith in your team. And I personally, yes, I do feel that India have got what it takes to, you know, as a team. And, you know, looking at that thing with the medal ceremony after and just how they're just so gelled and focused and together and this team spirit thing, I think they're well up for it.
I'm going to go differently, just purely to add a little bit of
to wind me up
competition on this. South Africa for me. I know they got battered the other day, and that was a one-off. It didn't, you know, if it's back to the final, does that make any difference? I think South Africa will finish either second or third. Will miss India in the semi-final.
I think that's confirmed.
Yeah,
I think it's confirmed. Australia's SA.
Yeah. I think South Africa beat Australia, unless, I mean, like you said, unless Maxwell or David Warner does something ridiculous. Or Mitchell Starc suddenly takes 6 wickets for 12 or something at the top of the order or something. You know, everything else being equal, I think South Africa are a better side than Australia. This Australia side, to me, obviously very good, bailed out by one person today. I think they are a 5 or 6 out of 10 compared to the great World Cup winning Australian sides of the past. They're nowhere near in terms of quality throughout the team. Whereas this South Africa side, probably man for man, there have been better South African sides in the past, but this South African side are playing like a proper team. And I like that. Claire?
They are, but is it all going to boil down to whether they bat first or second? Whether they get through, you know, because that's been a significant thing, hasn't it, South Africa, is when they've bat first, they've won, when they've bat second, they haven't won. So is that going to be like... you know, even for them personally, like, we've lost the toss, we've lost the game kind of thing? Or, you know, are they going to be able to get around that if they don't get that opportunity?
No, okay, you've convinced me South Africa aren't going to do it. So I'm going to find a way. On count back in the group stage, England managed to get through to the semi-finals and end up winning the trophy. Yeah, what about that? There'll be some law somewhere, some Cricket World Cup regulation, where the team that finishes bottom makes the semi-finals.
Yeah, but England don't read the laws. So
I'm not going to ask you, Neil, because you'll just say India.
I will do, but if it's not going to be India, then Afghanistan. Mujeeb catching at fine leg, the 10th wicket.
Oh, that'd be karma, wouldn't it? It'd be beautiful. Mujeeb rising from the ashes of his ignominy today, because I do hope
that he's been one of the pillars alongside with Rashid in getting Afghanistan.
Let me say one thing before we finish today, because we're finishing today.
Fakir Zaman.
Rashid Khan, what a numpty. Absolute fool. At the end, I mean, all of this stuff, keepy up is, the ball's played back to him and he's kicking the ball up in the air. He actually gave away a run towards the end of today's match by basically trying to do a keepy uppy, and it went off his side of his foot and went away for an overthrow. If a fielder in that, if that Afghan side did that off his bowling, he would daggers them. He would tell them about that for the next 5 days in the team hotel. He would roast them. Absolute numpty at times. Brilliant player. And he was trying to stir them up today, but his own fielding at times, when he's trying to kick the ball around and do keep you up, which he patently can't do. Stop doing it, Rashid. You're a good enough player without trying to show off that you're not quite David Beckham. Neil Varani, Claire Sanderson. In fact, Claire, one last task for you. You on the IPL feeds in the past have done morale-boosting chats to your IPL teams. I want you to now go into the England dressing room and roast them. I want you to go in there and tell them what you really think of them. You're outside in the corridor. We're going to knock on the door. Just put that. We got Claire Sanderson coming in to give England a team talk ahead of their wooden spoon clash against Netherlands. Claire, over to you.
Right, guys. I've never had a challenge like this before. Yeah, you're the reigning world champions. What would it mean to you to finish at least one rung above the bottom? You need some self-respect. Look at the skill and the talent that you've got among yourselves. Look at the runs that you've accumulated. Look at those big innings that you've scored in the past. Look at those wickets you've taken and think to yourselves, do you really want to walk away with a wooden spoon, or do you want to walk away with some degree of respect? Go out there and do what you know you're good at. That's it. That's all.
There you go, Josh Butler. You don't need to be a morale-boosting, rah-rah-rah England captain. Just play that to the team before they run out against Netherlands tomorrow. And everything, Josh, will be okay. Neil Varani, Claire Sanderson, thank you very much for joining me on today's Cricket Badger podcast. It's been a pleasure to see both of you. And Cricket Badgers out there, we'll see you again very soon.
Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
In my dentist's office.
More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.